Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Don and Dude.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. It's the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Don with me. What's up, my man? You ready to hit the road?
Road trip. Woo!
Road trip!
Oh, yeah.
So how you doing, Don?
I'm good. I got my Cheetos. I feel like you grab a bag of Cheetos from the gas station, and then you get orange dust all over the dashboard and everything.
Right. Yeah, see, I don't like to make a mess like that in my vehicle on a road trip. I prefer to eat at restaurants and stuff, but you know, if I don't care about my body, it's all about combos.
Ooh, yeah. Let's go in.
All right. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums. The album format, looking for all kinds of reasons to talk about them, and we've got a great show for you this week. We're starting our summer road trip, visiting a different state each episode. We're going to be rolling to Alabama. As always, Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to have some shout-outs to some other albums and album-related items we're digging, and then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to learn where we'll be going for the next episode. This week, it's all about Alabama.
Alabama! That's what I'm talking about!
Welcome to Alabama, where Southern hospitality and rich musical heritage await you. Discover the legendary Muscle Shoals Studios, the Alabama Music Hall of Fame, and live music at the iconic Florabama Lounge. Explore the U.S. Space and Rocket Center in Huntsville, the Civil Rights Landmarks of Birmingham, and the beautiful white sand beaches of Gulf Shores. From jazz and blues history to scenic trails and unforgettable festivals, Alabama offers something special for every visitor.
Wow.
I work for the Alabama Board of Tourism.
Good job. So yeah, there's quite a bit to choose from here. So much in the country space as well as the jazz and blues space. A few artists that I'll throw out as some possibilities we would have had. Hank Williams Sr. and of course Jr. Nat King Cole. Emmylou Harris, Tammy Wynette, Jason Isbell. That's where I kind of wanted to go, a more current country artist. And of course, the band Alabama.
I was hoping Alabama wasn't from Alabama. Yeah.
But Martha Reeves of Martha and Vandellas, Tommy Shaw from Styx and other bands. But yeah, just a whole lot of rich musical history there. And of course, including the Muscle Shoals Studios and that whole sound, you know, so... So we've got the albums queued up, the tank's full, and Alabama ahead of us. Let's roll out with our cha-cha-cha choices.
You choose me?
Okay, so my pick from the state of Alabama comes from Commodores, or The Commodores.
I like The.
Yeah, they seem to kind of go back and forth on it. But anyway, their self-titled album was released in March 1977. It's their fifth studio album. This is basically a group of friends that were formed at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama in 1968. Features Lionel Richie on vocals, saxophones, and keyboards, Mylon Williams on keyboards, Thomas McClary on guitars and vocals, Ronald Lapreed on vocals and bass, Walter Orange on vocals, drums, and percussion, and William King on vocals and trumpet. So it sounds like they all sing.
That's like the whole, that's longer than the list of possibilities for the show.
Yep. And all six band members contributed to the songwriting on this album. So definitely a collaborative spirit in this band. So let's start with the opening cut. This is Squeeze the Fruit.
God. You know, I've often talked about how I miss songs being less straightforward and being more poetic or having to be more clever in how they talk about dirty stuff. But
yeah,
I'd rather just hear something about a wiener than Squeeze the Fruit.
This one's pretty transparent.
Yeah.
So Squeeze the Fruit was written by drummer Walter Clyde Orange. He also is the one delivering the main vocals on it.
And Orange, he's a fruit.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Maybe he's talking about himself.
That did not occur to me.
Didn't me either.
This was also co-written by guitarist Daryl Jones, who's not a member of the band, but does appear on this album. So, like I said, Orange provides those deep vocals. Seems like a lot of the funkier tracks that they do, he plays a pretty prominent role, whereas Lionel Richie is often there for the softer ballads. Squeeze the Fruit is about enjoying life and indulging in pleasure. The Squeeze the Fruit is a metaphor, you know, for the making the most of opportunities, not holding back.
Not just about squeezing people's body parts.
No, I think they call that a double entendre.
I think there's a triple entendre going on here.
But yeah, you know, a real funky beginning to the album.
Yeah, I like the bass line. It's slippery. It's all juicy. The horn arrangements are great. I mean, it just sounds so clean. And, it's always important, I think, to listen to the opening track of an album and kind of get the flavor. In this case, it's Fruit. But it just depends. Like, either you're going to enjoy the song or it's going to insult your intelligence a little bit.
Yeah. I think when in the world of funk, I think you can get away with a lot more. You know, so it's okay to be kind of silly and
yeah.
All right. So the album begins with Squeeze the Fruit. Further in, we get another kind of funky tune. Here's the big hit from them, Brick House. She's mighty, mighty. I'm just letting it all hang
out. She's a brick. That's kind of like the big brother to Squeeze the Fruit. You know, it's a continuation of the funk aesthetic with the hinting at sex stuff, but it's a little sexier and a little less silly.
Yes. Yeah. So, again, we've got the lead vocals from Walter Clyde Orange. I feel like it should be Sir Walter Clyde of Orange or something. Apparently, it's a reference to the phrase, built like a brick shithouse, which is not one I'm familiar with. Do you know that expression?
Yeah, it's an old one.
Okay.
I mean, if you think way back, there was outhouses. There were those rickety wooden structures, and the upgrade was a brick shithouse, you know.
So the big bad wolf can blow them.
Yes, exactly.
So it's describing a woman who is strong, attractive, and confidently built.
Stacked, I think is the term that used to be thrown around.
Yeah. So it's a metaphor for strength and beauty. I mean, some people, say it's kind of an anthem for body positivity and self-confidence. Yeah.
I suppose. You can, whatever gets you through the night, right? I mean, whatever the song means to you. I mean, if you can find positive spins for songs that are, you know, I've always thought about it as it's about this lady, like, walking by a construction site or something, and, you know, more of a whoop, whoop, check her out kind of a thing. You know, they give out the measurements, 36, 86. I don't know. I never understood what measurements mean.
Yeah.
I know it's objectification.
It's definitely
you don't hear them talking about their 4 inches of steel or anything.
So the lyrics were supposedly written by William King's wife. King is the trumpet player, Shirley Hannah King. But they didn't. She actually didn't get credited for it initially, but that was corrected later. The music originated from an impromptu jam session during a studio equipment break. Bassist Ronald Lapree started the riff. The band built the song around it. It's kind of a disco funk anthem.
This is 1977, so that fits.
Yeah, it's funny. Lionel Richie from the 80s.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to imagine him on a song like this. You know?
He was the saxophonist, and I think he grew into the role. And as we continue this conversation, we'll get into his influence starting to split the band kind of into two different bands in one. But yeah, I mean, this is a funk disco classic that has stood the test of time, has invaded the American lexicon, where she's a brick house, people know what that means.
All right, well, here's an example of the subtle Lionel Richie invasion. Here's a song called Zoom.
There was another Richie-led song I thought about for this funky situation, which is more of the funk, and it's kind of odd to hear him doing a delivery like that.
Yeah.
But I thought ultimately when we're doing four songs, I figured let's balance it kind of like the album is balanced, where it's half of it's funk and half of it is more of this sort of ballady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's lush, yearning for escape and transcendence, desire to break free from daily life and find a place where you can fly and feel refreshed and clear. It's a little hokey, but the strings support that sound. But lines like, "Zoom, I'd like to fly away far from here. Dear God, make me a bird so I can fly far, far, far away from here."
That movie keeps on giving.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Forrest Gump is a gift to us all based in Alabama. Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool song.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, maybe the most soulful track on the album. Mm-hmm. Really kind of feels more like traditional R&B and soul. I mean, his voice sounds great on it. You know, the instrumentation is kind of interesting. You know, little subtle horns or guitar thrown in. Yeah, I think it could be my favorite track on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's hear how the Commodores end this self-titled album. Yeah. Here's Easy.
Ooh, that's why I'm easy.
Talk about a turn of phrase that's become just a common way to say something was nice.
Yeah. So Easy was written by Lionel Richie, as you hear. It's a soulful ballad. You know, he's just so damn smooth sounding, you know.
Yeah.
It's...
Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, it's just warm and...
Well, his voice is what this, you know, Easy Like a Sunday Morning is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this was the song that... Like, so they were on Motown. They helped Motown move from that 60s girl groups and whatever era into the funk 70s. Mm-hmm. And then the next phase of Motown came with Lionel Richie and DeBarge.
Yeah. So the lyrics to Easy are basically about the end of a relationship. And, you know, so I think your protagonist here is basically saying he's at peace, right? He's moving. I'm easy like a Sunday morning. You know, I'm not going to sweat it. And I guess it's also kind of a reference to like small southern towns that basically would just shut down at, you know, 11:30 on a Saturday night. And then Sunday is dead.
Closed.
Because it's the Lord's Day.
Yeah. It was that way when I was a kid. It was weird when a store was open on Sunday. The chains started doing it and then the local stores had to do it. I lived in a little town in the Midwest, though. So I think even though it was the 80s, we still were holding on to some of that stuff. It's what's funny about Lionel, and maybe it's just because of their Alabama roots, but a lot of stuff he writes, I mean, it's like a country song, you know, in a lot of ways. His delivery is kind of like that too.
Yeah, that's right.
He's just capable of capturing all of those things with his voice and then the songwriting itself. I mean, it's just perfect for what we're trying to do here, talking about the state of Alabama, where this band straddled all these different genres and sounds because of where they grew up.
What was the track on Can't Slow Down that was like such a country song? I can't think of what it was.
It stuck on you when we were talking about Can't Slow Down, I don't know, a couple of years ago on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had that conversation then. And, you know, he wrote for Kenny Rogers, too.
Oh, I didn't realize he wrote for Kenny Rogers. I think they have the same plastic surgeon.
What?
They both... did Kenny Rogers die?
I think so, yes. Man, you're always... But, you just...
They both look so weird. Anyway.
I don't think Lionel looks weird.
He got kind of weird looking.
Yeah. Or the song I was referring to is Lady.
Oh, yeah.
Lady. So, yeah, it's just so cool to dig in from this different perspective, because I was trying to look at it from their cultural upbringing and finding those threads that tie it all together.
I think last time we talked about Lionel Richie, did I talk about how big his thumb was in the We Are the World video? He does the thumbs up.
You may have, yes. Does that haunt you?
I don't know. It's something that stuck with me.
You have nightmares where Lionel Richie's thumb is trying to kill you?
It's like Arsenio Hall's index finger.
Right.
All right. So we talked about some of the key songs on the album. You know, I guess we should, you know, sort of step back and talk about the album as a whole.
Got to rewind the tape From the road trip.
Yes. Well, I'll start with my clickbait headline. Those are back.
Hell yeah.
So my clickbait headline is Commodore's self-titled LP is not a pop funk masterpiece, but the fruit is still worth the squeeze.
Yeah. I mean, that's how they open it. They're inviting you to squeeze the fruit. So
yes. I don't know. I ended up a little disappointed with this album. I guess I'll say more in a bit. But, I mean, there's aspects of it I really enjoy.
Uh-huh.
Maybe part of it is just the it's so distinct, like the two sides of the band, that, you know, maybe it doesn't work for the flow of the album. But
yeah, for me overall, I like the balance. I like the blend of funk and soul and the balladry. I mean, I'm really there for the Lionel moments, though. Yeah, so my clickbait headline to describe the album, Commodores gave Motown its groove back, and Lionel Richie got a head start on dominating 80s pop by making it all look easy, like a Sunday morning.
Ooh, well done, sir.
Yeah, I mean, so the great tracks on here are pretty obvious. We talked about many of them. Funky Situation, that I mentioned briefly, I think is a pretty cool funk track, and Patch It Up was really the only song that I...
Really?
Just,
oh, that was one of my favorites. I don't know, the groove on it I really like. I think one time I accidentally hit random and that song came up first. And I'm like, ooh, you know, this is, you know, this isn't Squeeze the Fruit. Yeah, something about it, you know, kind of had like a, I guess it's just the groove or something I kind of liked. But for me, I'm not sure. I didn't have like a lot of moments where I was excited by this album. We've listened to, you know, several albums from sort of this R&B funk era of the 70s, Funkadelic, Isley Brothers, Chic, Earth, Wind, and Fire. And I think I preferred all those other albums. And I'm not sure that those artists are necessarily better than the Commodores. I think there's a lot here, but I don't know. Something about the album just, I never got completely drawn into it.
I think I viewed it more from the perspective of a road trip listen, and this is the kind of thing you could have on, and even if it was the only album you had access to, you could listen to it over and over again on a drive and be okay. And you know, that kind of comes along with the replay value for me. You get those two sides of sounds, and you know, I could roll with this.
Yeah, and I would say the production is pretty good. You know, they bring the pop into the funk, I guess, in an appealing way. Whereas maybe, you know, like, you know, Parliament and Funkadelic, you know, I think, you know, it doesn't quite have that, you know, that crossover sheen or something.
Yeah, well, these guys were more slick. I think having the power of Motown behind them probably assisted. But the mix is perfect. Like, the levels are all just right on all the songs. The horns are where they should be.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, nothing is drowned out. You know, when Lionel's voice needs to be elevated, it's elevated. You know, it's just a good job all around.
Yeah. And of course, Easy is just perfect. You know, it just has that easy Sunday morning vibe.
Well, just that ooh he does. Ooh. If you only played that, you almost get the whole song's feeling from just one sound.
Yeah, and as far as the legacy of this album, I mean, I think it is their most commercially successful record. And I guess it shows both sides of the band, right? I mean, Brick House is a, you know, kind of a disco-y funk anthem, and, you know, Easy is, I think that kind of put Lionel Richie, I think, on the map and really.
That this guy could be a solo guy.
Yep.
And that's the legacy to me, is the funk, Brick House, and those two songs are the legacy of this record.
All right. Well, the Commodore's self-titled album is a testament to the band's versatility and creative peak in the late 1970s, blending irresistible funk with smooth balladry. Give it a shot.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time again for Deep Questions by Don.
Go deep, buddy.
Into the deep south. So, well, we've talked about, well, some cultural treasures so far from Alabama, like Lionel Richie and Clyde Orange. what are some other cultural treasures from Alabama?
Well, the first thing that came to mind, and I know there's a lot of college sports and football and all that kind of stuff.
Roll Tide.
Yeah. But what came to mind for me was a book that hit me as a kid, and I think probably many kids in America read Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. So it takes place in a fictional town of Macomb, Alabama, from 1933 to 1935, the Great Depression era. The basic plot of the story is the character Scout narrates it and talks about her father. He's a lawyer who's helping a black man that was falsely accused of rape and causes a lot of tension within the small town. So it's pretty heavy duty. And, you know, growing up, it was just something that really hit me hard with some realities about how people treat each other.
And shoot rabid dogs.
Oh, then, yeah. That's what sticks with you because you're Mr. Vegetarian. It was rabid, dude.
Yes.
Had to be done.
Yeah. Like Old Yeller.
That's right. How about you?
Well, you know, I didn't go, you know, quite as, you know, I guess.
Deep?
Yes, deep as you. So I stuck with my my stomach. So I was thinking about food. And I mean, and of course, you know, the South is, you know, famous for barbecue and stuff. But actually a reference to another movie, Fried Green Tomatoes. That's a fun dish I've had at times.
It's like, hey, what do we do with this inedible thing? Let's fry it.
Yep. It generally works. But, I mean, I have a big sweet tooth. And so, you know, pecan pie.
Pecan.
Yeah. That's delicious.
Yeah. I never knew what that nut jelly was. It always kind of creeped me out.
Nut jelly.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah, I guess it does. Yeah, one nice thing about like any sweets you're having down south, it's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't mess with you know, things that are bitter. Well, maybe some rhubarb, right? Do they do rhubarb down there?
Yeah, but rhubarb pie is sweet.
Yes, that's true. All right. Well, what's your favorite thing from Alabama? Let us know on our social media, like Instagram and Facebook at Album Nerds.
Now, my choice is technically incorrect because James William Buffett was born December 25th, 1946 in Mississippi, but he grew up in Mobile, Alabama.
Andy would not be happy with this.
That's worse. Yes, I know. If he spent one day in another state, then it doesn't count. But Jimmy Buffett was raised in a working-class Catholic family, strong influence of the Gulf Coast lifestyle, that southern part of Alabama's right on the Gulf of America. So it's going to take some getting used to. But, you know, sailing, seafood, slow living, it all kind of started there. But country music, folk music, southern gospel, these were all, and that culture were sort of his influences. And he did try to make it as a country artist in Nashville, but it just didn't fly. And he ended up moving to Florida, Key West, and digging into that lifestyle. And that started to influence what became his sound. And unfortunately, Jimmy passed away in September 2023. But the album is Changes in Latitudes, Changes in Attitudes. Released January of 1977. We accidentally have two albums from 77.
Oops.
Producer Norbert Putnam, Alabama native, Muscle Shoals session veteran. So that another tie in there.
It's annoying that Latitudes has like just one T, but Attitudes has the double T.
Well, that's what spell check is for. So this really creates that trop rock sound, the acoustic guitar, the mandolin, steel drums, flute, electric piano. And with him was the Coral Reefer Band, Coral Reefer, and the guy liked smoking the dopes. It's mostly original songs with a few covers and a few songs he had recorded on previous albums. But why don't we jump in with the title and opening track, Changes in Latitudes, 1T, Changes in Attitudes, 2Ts.
Good times and riches and son of a bitches, I've seen more than I can recall. These changes in latitudes, changes in
attitudes. What a great lyric.
Yes. He has a lot of those over the years, you know, just some little clever line like that.
Yeah, like Cheeseburger in Paradise. Oh, wait, that one sucked.
Jeez.
I'm gonna piss somebody off right there. Parrot heads coming after me.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the second single from the album. And it really encapsulates those themes of escapism, personal growth, the transformative power of travel. Like you change your location, your whole vibe can change. I think that's just a cool way of saying it. And it encourages listeners to embrace that lifestyle. And that's what I think he accidentally did, creating this, not cult, but close to it,
yeah,
the parrot head, you know, this whole lifestyle brand that was unintentionally created the songs on this album.
I've always really liked this song, even though it's, you know, it's kind of a happy song, right? But there's still a sadness.
All of his songs have that. I mean, he's having these revelations for a reason,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think that's what I've always liked about him. You know, I remember my sister got, you know, his greatest hits compilation, you know, from like BMG or something. And I listened to it a lot as a kid. And even though I had no interest in like country music, for some reason, the Jimmy Buffett kind of spoke to me. And I think it is sort of that inherent sadness. And plus just
yeah. Yeah, there we go. Oh, he's sad.
There's just something romantic about sort of that persona, the person whose life is maybe falling apart and they're just kind of there in a bar or at sea on a boat all alone. You know, it's just there's a romantic aspect of it that I find appealing.
I've listened to this album all the way through once before this week. I've never really been a fan. I've had friends that are parrot head types really try and get me into it. And I was always kind of turned off by the whole Margaritaville restaurant thing and just kind of thought, this is all just to sell stuff.
Unwind relaxing.
Yeah, unwind relaxing with the rest of the crab catchers. But no, it's not. This is real stuff coming from this guy. It's just this vibe and sound and feeling and life that he was leading, and it's actually pretty cool.
He really does a good job with mixing the country western with like the island vibe, because like that song there, you hear the strings that sounds very much Nashville, you know, right out of that machine, but
just
the
feels
drums
so nautical
underneath
too.
Yeah, there's like the sort of the Caribbean style drums or something, but
steel drums and stuff. All right, so the big one that broke it all for Mr. Buffett, he had some minor hits before, but why don't we jump into Margaritaville?
I blew out my flip-flop, stepped on a pop-top.
Yeah, we got that nice storytelling, blew out my flip-flop. I never even heard of a flip-flop until then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we called them thongs back then, before thongs were the thing for your butt.
Oh, right. Yep. Yeah. I remember that.
So, Margaritaville, anthem of escapism and alcoholism, but really about avoidance of the problems, of the issues in a relationship, you know, after it ended. But it's a cultural phenomenon, and I do love, it's nobody's fault that the relationship ended. Mm-hmm. Could be my fault.
Yeah.
And as he continues with more margaritas, it's my own damn fault. Yeah. I just think that's a nice touch.
It is. I wonder if there's another song that has the lyric render, or soon it will render.
Yes. When he's talking about the frozen.
Yeah, the frozen concoction.
Yep. Yeah.
Such just great imagery.
The blender and render.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What rhymes with blender?
What does a drink do? It comes together. It renders. It works though.
Yeah, I mean this is just a classic song.
Yeah, and it fit so well in that time period of the late 70s, but is less dated because it doesn't have that yacht rock sound.
Yeah.
Like it sounds more singer-songwriter,
right?
You know?
Yeah, of course, this is, you know, the big rival to this song is the If You Like Pina Coladas. What's that song called? Right. I always forget the name of that.
I always called it the Pina Colada song. It's by that Rupert Holmes, right?
Yes, yeah. Escape, the Pina Colada song.
Okay, so the Pina Colada song is in parentheses. That's an interesting one, too, where it's personal ads, right? And these ex-wife and husband end up responding to their own personal ads, which would be the equivalent of swiping right these days.
Yeah.
So they end up together anyway. Yeah. I mean, yes, that had a tropical sound, too, but this did it better.
Play Margaritaville. I love that song.
All right, so moving on. Don, what song you want to go with here for when you want to talk about on the album?
I chose Wonder Why We Ever Go Home.
Years grow shorter, not longer. More have been on your own.
And this guy wasn't even that old at this point. This is how I feel now.
Yeah. That's it. Songs like this with every year, like they hit closer to home each time. You know, the years grow shorter, not longer. So, I mean, there's some other songs I thought about, like Banana Republic, but I wanted to choose one that Jimmy Buffett wrote.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many songs out there that talk about home, like it's the place you want to be, you know, there's no place like home and you're trying
Mama,
to get home.
I'm coming home.
Right. So home is where you want to get, you know, there's a romantic notion, but here, like home is, you know, if you're home, you're doing nothing. You know, if you're out and about, you're experiencing life. So that's kind of an interesting twist on the idea of home.
Yeah, it's the whole kind of pirate life. Like, not the stab you and take your doubloons type of pirate, but the 70s weed-smoking pirate that's just meandering around the oceans and bays.
Yeah. This one has a pretty simple arrangement. You know, I like that it's, you know, it starts out acoustic, and then there's some, like, little sly guitar swells in there. This song was actually first recorded for a movie called Rancho Deluxe, for which Buffett had done the whole soundtrack. So this, you know, was re-recorded a couple years later, I guess with a sort of a bigger arrangement. But again, you know, themes of aging and restlessness and monotony.
Well, that kind of imagery of returning to a familiar place, but it doesn't feel the same. So even when you do make landfall, it's not the same place that you left behind, you know?
That's true.
Yeah. God, this for Mr. Sunshine, this is a little depressing.
Yeah. It's Robert Smith with a Hawaiian shirt on and
a mustache.
Robert Smith of The Cure.
All right, so why don't we get into the closing track, Landfall. Now, there are a couple of rhymes in there that I might edit. You know, what if I met Lucille Ball? I mean, come on, guy. Yeah. Other things rhyme with Landfall besides Lucille Ball.
He likes to throw in a lot of old movie references and stuff.
So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the other side of what we were just talking about. I Wonder Why We Ever Go Home, where this is Landfall and that internal conflict between the allure of the adventure and then the responsibilities of being back on land. But it also, the song sounds like a party. So
sometimes I think when Jimmy Buffett gets more... When the rhythm picks up or the tempo picks up, it doesn't work quite as well for me. It gets a little corny sounding.
It feels a little bit like a church performance or something. You know what I mean? Like when you're in church and then it's like, oh, we've got Pastor Rock and Roll, and this guy comes out and plays the acoustic guitar, and he's like, hey, y'all, want to hear about Landfall and the Lord? It kind of has that vibe to me, but it's not my favorite on the album, but I think it's an appropriate closer. And I do enjoy the vibe of it. It's nice to try and finish with a party. And then depending on the time of year, you might want to change your latitudes and attitudes again and start over. All right. So we've touched on four tracks on the album in some detail. Let's rewind and reflect. Why don't we dig in a little bit more to the album as a whole? And I'm going to kick it off with my clickbait headline to describe changes in latitudes, changes in attitudes. From Mobile to Margaritaville, one Alabama beach bum turned southern storytelling and saltwater daydreaming into trop rock.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he created a whole vibe. And I'm sure there were other artists maybe dabbling in this space, but he did it perfectly. The lyrics, the attitude, the voice is just right. It's got that encroachy-ish kind of thing going, but it's his own. It's just his totally own space. Thoughtful pacing, breezy textures, enough emotional depth, that sadness that gets Don's heart pumping, and a dash of humor, which I think is important to kind of even that out.
Yeah, he, you know, Sirius XM, you know, they have like the genre specific stations. And so, like, I feel like Jimmy Buffett, you know, he can be on the one that has like the singer songwriters, you know, the Gordon Lightfoots and stuff. He belongs there, but he also can be on the, you know, the 70s country western channel as well.
Yep. Well, and then, you know, of course, there's what made me start to appreciate Jimmy Buffett was Alan Jackson's song, It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and his part on it. I'm like, you know what? Maybe Jimmy ain't so uncool after all.
Yeah, well, my clickbait headline is Buffett turns sadness into tropical party.
Wow, you really, really busted your brain on that one, huh?
Well, I wanted to focus on the sadness. But, you know, I picture, you know, just people in a bar, you know, there's sometimes joy and laughter and happiness, you know, on the surface. But, you know, like everybody there is sad and, or, you know, they're, you know, crying in their drink somehow, or I don't know. So I just think he captures that well. So, you know, there's an undercurrent of melancholy, but it's still presented in a, you know, very positive way. And some of those like island instruments, you know, sort of
help.
Yeah. They create sort of a false sense of joy and happiness. Yeah. And for the most part, it works. Sometimes I think that stuff can be a bit distracting. You know, if it had more just a straight up acoustic approach.
But then it wouldn't be what it is.
True.
You know?
That's true.
It wouldn't be trop rock. It wouldn't be like that's...
He'd be Gordon Lightfoot.
Yeah. And that's real life, though, too, is balancing out the sadness with the happiness, or maybe getting drunk to try to deal with something and, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice balance, personally. Same with the album as a whole, the songs. Of course, you know, Margaritaville and Latitudes and Wonder Why were great, but Biloxi I really enjoyed. I think that's a great tune. I think he didn't write that one, right?
Right.
But it's just, it's a little on the sadder side, but he sounds great on it. And Banana Republic you mentioned, were there any other standout killer tracks for you?
The Cruise one, Lovely Cruise.
Yeah, that's really nice, too.
Yeah, I like Lovely Cruise. Oh, In the Shelter's a good one.
I had that on my filler list, like on my so great. Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one that he re-recorded for some reason.
I Miss You Badly was on that list for me, too. They weren't bad. They just kind of slowed it down a little too much for me. But
yeah, In the Shelter doesn't have the pretense of being happy. It just is.
No. Yeah. Production-wise, warm and personal, gentle instrumentation, laid-back mix. I think a good job here. The tropical flourishes, the flute and the steel drums and harmonica. Give it that vacation getaway feel that just works.
Totally.
Anything to say about production?
I concur.
I'm glad you occurred.
You know, because my introduction to Jimmy Buffett was a greatest hits album.
Yeah.
Like over the years, I keep trying to find a studio album that, you know, that I really like all the way through. And I think this is probably the best one. You know, I think it's the most, you know, consistent album, or, you know, it has a, you know, a very consistent vibe, you know, much more consistent than the Commodores.
Hmm.
But I mean, just like you said, the Commodores is more versatile, you know, so there's,
yes,
that was, you know, sort of two sides to a band. And this is more kind of one note, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a nice note.
I agree.
So an Alabama man created a laid-back lifestyle empire with this album as its foundational blueprint, which is just so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It remains essential for fans and not just the Parrotheads, but for those seeking relaxation. Go check out Jimmy Buffett. Changes in Latitudes, Changes in Attitudes, instead of the Greatest Hits collections. Go check out the records.
Yes.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
All right. Well, we had a week of, you know, living life like a Sunday morning or... Or living the parrot head lifestyle, you know.
There you go.
You know. Did you have a chance to listen to anything else?
I sure did. So I kind of stuck with, when looking through the list of Alabama bands, I saw Brother Kane, which was a band from the 90s that I met them in-store at the record store I was working at the time, and kind of a Black Crowes-y sort of vibe, but they're from Birmingham, Alabama, formed in 1990. By singer, guitarist Damon Johnson and bassist Glenn Maxey. And it blends hard rock, southern rock, and alternative influences. So their debut album was called Brother Kane, released in May of 93. Let's listen to a little bit of Got No Shame. Can't go wrong with little cowbell.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Definitely Black Crowes-ish.
Yeah, some of the other songs are a little more on the alt-rock side and less twangy, but... I just got a vinyl copy of this, actually. It was re-released on a Christian record label, which I didn't really think of this as Christian rock or anything, but it's an orange and purple pressing from a couple of years ago. Happy to have that back in the collection. I used to have it on CD, but lost it somewhere along the way.
Did these guys just go away?
They did two other albums, and then they kind of broke up, and I guess they do occasional performances still. Next up, it's not from the 90s, but it kind of sounds like it is. The band is Dark Sun, a Chicago-based hard rock duo featuring brothers Tristan and Luke Shiedlow. The single is Dig Down, released in March of this year. Grunge inspired. It's available as a 3-track single on streaming right now. Don't know if an album's coming. It seems like there might be, but not sure. Let's listen to a little bit of Dig Down. Like, pretty much sounds like something I'd like. Is it a little derivative? Yes.
What is it?
Am I okay with that? Yes.
Yeah, you're digging the Dig Down.
That's right. So what you digging there, Donny boy?
Well, this actually has sort of a Jimmy Buffett vibe. Dope Lemon.
Nice.
Yeah. It's actually an Australian musician named Angus Stone. This is his fifth studio album. The album is called Golden Wolf. Here's a song called On the 45.
Blew out the flip flop, stepped on a pop top.
So it kind of blends indie rock with psychedelic soul and sort of a laid back islandy vibe on some of those.
Well, it doesn't hurt that it's got one of those, what are they called? The water planes that land on the water on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
Moving on.
And I just found something from the world of post-punk, a group called Datura, I think. And careful, there's another Datura out there. I don't know how that happens, but they have a new album called Songs from a Dark House. Here's a song called Still Waiting. To help me get outside of my
head. Yes. This is what Don needs right here. It's smearing on some lipstick. His mascara is running. Perfect.
Speaking of derivatives.
Hey, it sounds good. I'm going to check this out.
So second full-length album from this post-punk trio from Wenatchee, Washington. It's just a little sub-Seattle scene. I don't know.
It's the London of Washington.
All right. Well, what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky. And also, don't forget to dig on some other podcasts like our friend Jess over at Music Notes with Jess. You can keep up with what's trending each week. It's Music Notes with Jess everywhere you find podcasts.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about time on the show when I'm reminded of the words of Jim Nabors, commonly known as playing Gomer Pyle from his own show as well as the Andy Griffith Show. And he said, "I come from a place where you don't need to wear a watch because it doesn't matter what time it is. In Alabama, we eat when we're hungry and we go home when we're tired." Well, golly! With that in mind, let's bring out the Wheel of Musical Discovery to see what great state we'll visit next time.
Next stop on our Bands Across America tour, Ohio. From rock pioneers to genre-bending trailblazers, you will be diving into albums that reflect the bold, eclectic sound of the Buckeye State.
Two albums in Ohio. So Ohio, that's cool.
That's good.
I've been through Ohio many times. I've enjoyed the rest stops.
The Buckeye State?
Yeah.
And the Buckeye, that's a flower, right?
I thought it was like the little nut. There are these nuts. That maybe looks like a deer's eye. That's why they're called Buckeyes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, what's your favorite record from the Buckeye State? What else are you listening to? Email us at podcast@albumnerds.com or follow us on Instagram and our other social media at Album Nerds. You can visit our website, albumnerds.com, to listen to all 294 episodes. And the best way to support the show is to share it. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
Thank you once again for joining us here on the Album Nerds Podcast. Catch you next time in Ohio.
All right, well, I'll do your favorite Jimmy Buffett song.
I like mine with lettuce and tomato. Mine's 57 and French fried potatoes.
The way you do it, though, sounds like a country song, so I actually like it. All right, see you in Ohio.